This podcast is a proud member of the That Moment In Podcast Network. Check out the network at thatmomentin.com.
All right, and welcome back to a midweek edition of Cinema Recap. Got your hosts, myself, John Bonham, with Mark Jackson. And we got the one and only Vern back on the show with us. Vern, how you doing, man?
Pretty good. Thank you very much, John. Yeah, doing good, man. Good to see Mark.
Hey, always nice to hear the voice, Vern.
Oh, thanks, buddy.
Well, yeah, in the spirit of Halloween, we thought it might be kind of fun to get together and just talk through, I think, not only our favorite scary movies, but also just, you know, some of the ones that maybe had some kind of impact on us, or, you know, kind of like the first ones that we remember growing up. I know there were certainly a few from way back when that my dad forced me to watch, which at the time were, you know, unbearably scary, and looking back, they're just kind of, you know, humorous. So yeah, guys, where should we start?
Burr, you want to take this one off?
Well, we can kind of definitely start with, like, you know, childhood horror movies. Growing up, I had an older sister, and her and her friends would always have control of the TV downstairs, because we only had one TV downstairs for the kids and one upstairs for the grown-ups and everything. And a movie that I watched quite a few times when I was younger, and I probably shouldn't have, was the original Nightmare on Elm Street. Actually, both that one and the second one were constantly being played between screenings of Girls Just Want to Have Fun. It was like Girls Just Want to Have Fun, then A Nightmare on Elm Street. Yeah, just those two kind of back to back.
And it's quite a combination.
I know, right? So, and the whole concept of a killer who stalks you in your sleep. When you're around the age of, like, 9 or 10, like I was, yeah, it was a little kind of freaky, but, you know, you're there with, you know, your sister and a whole bunch of her friends, and you don't want to seem like the kind of scaredy cat, because you're there with, like, older girls, and, like, oh, you got that act, like, you're nonchalant, and this stuff doesn't scare you at all, but then when everyone starts to, like, fall asleep, you're, like, still wide awake, and you're in your room, and you're trying your best not to fall asleep. So, yeah, that one had a big impact on me. That one in Jaws also had a big impact on me.
Ah, yeah.
Oh man, some classics.
Yeah. What about you, John?
Well, you know, so I think I was a little bit behind. So by the time, like, I was, you know, I guess finally getting into the movies and scary movies, and, you know, old enough for my parents to let me watch them, I was, well, shoot, I take it back, because now that I think about it, the first one that really impacted me was Silver Bullet, which was actually kind of an older movie.
Oh, if you Gary guys are Busey.
Familiar. Yeah, Gary Busey, the Stephen King werewolf movie.
Didn't that be Corey Feldman, or was that Corey Haim in the wheelchair? Gosh, what, that was one of the Coreys, right?
It wasn't Feldman.
Was it Haim?
I think it might have been Corey Haim.
Okay.
But, yeah. I mean, at the time, like, I mean, I would be up all night, paranoid that a werewolf was breaking into our house, you know, couldn't sleep, absolutely terrified for years. And then, you know, finally, looking back years later, if you watch this movie, it is absolutely comical. And, I mean, Gary Busey is just amazing in it. So, but, I mean, that's the first one that really, you know, just, like, ruined my nights of sleep for years upon years.
Gosh, that's a good one. I do remember, like, the Legend of Sleepy Hollow, that little cartoon Disney animated short. That one kind of freaked me out, too.
Mm.
I could see that, kind of like the creepy cartoon vibe.
Yeah, the Headless Horseman right there, I was just really kind of freaked out by that every Halloween, because they played constantly on TV. It was, like, the only thing that got played. That, and also another thing that freaked me out when I was younger, the Michael Jackson Thriller video. I could not watch that video for years.
Sure.
I hear you on that one. All those zombies dancing around. No, it's creepy.
It was begin sequence where Michael Jackson started to change, and the girl goes up to him, like, what's wrong? And he turns around, that freaking face going, get away! But, yeah, when I was, like, 7 years old, when that video came on, I had to leave the room. I could not watch that at all.
Well, it's a tough one because you want to leave the room because it's scary, but the music was so damn good.
I know, because when they would play it at my house, I would have to like kind of be away from the TV, but kind of peek my head around the corner so I can watch it. Because when the zombies were dancing, it was kind of comical, but it was at the beginning sequence that was done. And I want to say that was Joe Dante that directed that.
The beginning, I will go with your word on that one.
Before the movie actually starts. I know it's from the director of American Werewolf in London.
Okay, I could buy that. Mark, I know you got a list of a few that that came to mind. It sounded like pretty quickly for you. What do we have up there?
Yeah, so kind of keeping with the theme of stuff that we remember when we were kids and the first time maybe we've been exposed to horror. I'm going to take it back a little bit. And, you know, I was kind of growing up in the 90s and whatnot. And I remember, like, my dad introduced this movie to us called Leprechaun. Everyone kind of knows the Leprechaun at this point. But I forget where he saw it. I think when I was growing up, we had this, like, UPN affiliate where they showed a lot of late-night movies sometimes on the weekends. Usually, you know, cult-type horror movies, that type of stuff. And that's when I think he caught the first Leprechaun. So he saw it, and then he, you know, had all of us watch it because, you know, for some reason he was just super into it. So we all watched it. And it was kind of one of those things where after we watched the first one, my dad was like, oh, they have a second and a third, and, you know, they have him going into space and all that stuff. So for a consistent, like, 3 weeks straight, we had just, like, all of us, the family, we went on a binge to watch Leprechaun 2 and Leprechaun 3. And then we finally got, you know, his bad stuff when he went in space, and then he finally went into the hood, and he did this, and he did that. I saw all of them in probably a span of, probably a good month. And they weren't, like, great movies. I can't really remember a ton of them. But, I mean, I will say Warwick Davis still kind of – he gives a pretty good performance what he is as that Leprechaun. I mean, I would say he's pretty iconic. Like, I will never forget him, you know, saying the one-liners. And he was kind of like a B or a C Freddy Krueger. He was the guy who – still had that type of energy and those type of, like, witty lines. He brought comedy to the role. So in many ways, I kind of felt like it was Freddy Krueger's spiritual successor without actually being Freddy Krueger, now actually being, like, a razor-bladed, you know, monster. So, yeah, that's kind of like my original foray into horror, if you will.
Mark, is the third one the one where he goes to Vegas? Or
I think that's it. Yeah, that's the one where he goes to Vegas. And I don't remember, again, a ton of the movies, but I do remember, like, some of the kills he had where he would manipulate stuff and there was, like, a fan going on. Some guy is thinking that this super hot girl is, you know, giving him the business, but it's actually a fan. So as he gets closer, he gets pulled in, and then just his face gets wrecked by the blades. Like, I remember some of these kills randomly. So I think around 3 was when they – started going direct to video, so the quality was definitely lesser. The names, I mean, the first one had Jennifer Aniston, I want to say. The rest of them, you know, didn't have that same type of clout star-wise, but still, nonetheless, you know, I remember them, you know, for being kind of bad, but, you know, semi-enjoyable, so that was my first foray into kind of a series-long horror, if you will.
I mean, if you're able to vividly remember the kills like that, it obviously had, you know, some sort of, you know, positive impact on you, I would think.
I would have loved to have seen the Leprechaun and Chucky team up together.
So that was my next one, is the Child's Play movies.
Really nice.
Those, I mean, to this day, like, still just completely creep me out. That doll, I don't know what it is, but... Sure. I don't even know if I've ever watched one of the movies start to finish, but, like, when I was little, it creeped me out to the max. I still find him really creepy today. I don't know. Not for me. The whole doll thing. I know some people have clowns or what have you. That is definitely my kryptonite.
That is a movie that I remember watching as a family, is the first Child's Play. Yeah. Sorry, but my parents are weird. We watched Silence of the Lambs as a family.
You guys had some interesting family movie nights, Vern.
We all had, like, you know, steak, too. We all had food while watching Silence of the Lambs. Yeah, it was Good time
I think
to have
we're
steak.
Watching like Lion King.
Yeah, Lion King, Aladdin's, that type of stuff, definitely.
I need to clear up one quick thing for listeners. Okay, well, the director of Thriller was actually John Landis. He directed American Werewolf in London. So to those few people out there screaming at their computers or listening to devices, it was John Landis who did Thriller, not Joe Dante. My apologies.
Well, let's see. What else we have here? Any other big ones from childhood that you guys have? Or do we want to move on to maybe, like, some favorite ones?
Okay.
Yeah, move on to
the
favorites.
Move on to favorites, man. Yeah.
Vern, I feel like Hereditary's got to be there for you.
You know what? Actually, here's the thing. With Halloween and horror, my lists change every year. Every year, there's going to be a different list, and that's what I have here this year. Is a list of some maybe underrated gems that I think should be mentioned. And the first one I want to mention is Drag Me to Hell. 2009 Sam Raimi movie. This one is about a painter who gets cursed by a gypsy because she wouldn't allow her to get an extension on her loan. And she's been told that in 7 days she's going to be sent to hell. And it's got this great balance of horror and humor, sometimes within the same scene. There's a great sequence when she's being haunted by the gypsy lady in this garage with a car, and Sam Raimi just knows how to blend both those genres together very well. And I'm going to make a bold statement here, gentlemen, all right? Now, you may totally disagree with me on this, but I'm going to say that Drag Me to Hell is better than all three Evil Dead movies.
Hmm.
Ooh.
Just because he knows Sam Raimi can make a scene in a movie make you scared and then turn around and make you laugh right away.
I won't disagree with the fact that I think he balances Drag Me to Hell extremely well. Wasn't there a talking goat in that movie at one part too?
Okay, yes. Yes, it was a dark note, okay.
And I'm not knocking it for that, but I'm just trying to make sure my memory serves me right.
You're right, no.
I actually love the newest Evil Dead movie. Personally, I would give that one the edge over Drag Me to Hell. True, but I definitely enjoyed watching Drag Me to Hell, and I thought Raimi did a good job.
I agree with that, but Sam Raimi did not direct the new Evil Dead.
Right. Oh, you mean the original Evil Dead. Oh, my bad.
Yeah.
Okay. I forgot there were three of those ones.
Yep. I was talking about those, not the new Evil Dead that came out. Or just Evil Dead. The original's called The Evil Dead. The new one's Evil Dead.
Okay.
So I would give you that then. I agree with you. I think I enjoyed that movie more. The original ones, I think rewatching them, they're just kind of – they're a little too campy, and you probably had to be around when they came out to truly appreciate them. So I think Drag Me to Hell definitely resonated more for me.
Yeah.
All right.
I don't know if we're going all on the list here all at once here, but I'm just going to do one at a time. Or I don't know how you want to.
Yeah. Mark, how about you? You got any – what's your favorite scary movie? Let's throw it out there.
Favorite scary movie? Okay, we're hopping right into it. Let's keep up the Halloween momentum. And I'm going to say my favorite movie is still John Carpenter's Halloween as far as horror goes. We talked about it a lot on Sunday's podcast where, it inspired so many other movies and so many other genres even. There's still something about it where, if you're grading it on like pure scares, it might not be like as scary as maybe some other movies that might appear on you guys' list, but there is just like a level of craftsmanship and like precision that I think doesn't really exist in a lot of horror movies. There's just so many unforgettable shots. There's obviously the iconic Michael Myers mask where they pulled, some mask from a local costume store that was, outfitted to be William Shatner's mask. They just painted it and they made movie legend, just off of that. Again, there's something that still sticks with me with that first Halloween. Like, I didn't grow up in 1978, but the first time I'd watched it a couple years ago, I won't forget the feeling that came over me. I think I was watching on AMC too, so I was just watching it with commercial breaks. But you know, there from beginning to end, there's just like a level of immersion that, you know, you feel, you get that shot when you're in Michael Myers' eyes, and you really get to understand, you know, Laurie, and you kind of get to understand some of the other characters as well. I still think it's just a high watermark of horror that not many films, you know, really get.
Well, and plus people forget, too, that the movie was made with a little bit of money, like not that much money at all. And so the filmmakers had to be very creative with how they film things. In fact, most of the budget, and I mentioned this before on another episode, was just spent on the camera for the movie, just to get that Panavision lens there. So with all the budget is being spent on the film camera, you don't have enough money for actors or costumes or actually setting, so they had to do like a lot of work, and that kind of love of filmmaking is kind of missing when you can just do everything in post with CG and all that stuff right there. So yeah, this definitely was a landmark movie, and I'm hoping maybe the new one was also sort of made with that less that kind of budget. At least that's what I heard you guys talk about on an episode. So
yeah.
I'm hoping that this will maybe inspire more people to create horror back in the older ways.
Right.
I mean, when you work with such a limited budget, to make a quality movie, you've really got to rely on, you know, a movie that's going to entice people and, you know, the quality of the scare. And it can't just be entirely a gore fest. And I think the original Halloween nails that. I looked up the original budget and it was $325,000, which is just insane.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we were talking about, you know, how small the newest Halloween movie budget was, and it was $10 million. So, I mean, it's just amazing that Carpenter was able to do, you know, so much with so little back then.
Right. And then, you know, you got the legendary theme too. I mean, it's up there with Jaws. It's up there with James Bond. I mean, you know, I forget how many keys exactly there are. I've been listening to the Halloween Unmasked podcast, which is amazing. It goes really into depth into the entire series. But, you know, that theme itself, man, it's just when you hear that beat come on, you hear the keys, and then you hear the crescendos and all that, all those intricacies, it's pretty wild.
Yeah, I mean, it, when you think of, like, the quintessential Halloween movie, I mean, it's called Halloween, for God's sake. So
yeah.
I think it's probably the one that would come to most people's minds. And Michael Myers is probably one of the most iconic, you know, Halloween, at the very least, you know, scary movie characters. So, yeah, I mean, you're hard pressed to find, you know, a lot of scary movies that are better than Halloween, I would say.
Yeah.
Vern, I know it sounded like you had a few other on your list there after Drag Me to Hell. What else we got?
I did. Okay, well, since you mentioned Halloween, now, one of my favorite sequels from the original, I guess, timeline before everything got erased with a new one is one that has nothing to do with Michael Myers at all, and that is Halloween 3, Season of the Witch. Yes, this movie does have some questionable acting and some kind of questionable special effects, but I think the storyline is actually really kind of engaging, and it's really kind of creepy. It's all about this company who are making these masks to kill kids. And I remember when this one was coming out and the tagline read, "The Night No One Came Home." I thought that was freaking eerie. Now, how it's executed, I'll admit there are some flaws there, and of any movie in the Halloween series that I wish was remade, I wish number 3 was remade, because if you gave it a little better budget and some better acting, I think this could be a very good movie. But just don't call it Halloween 3, which they should have done when this was released. It's just called it Season of the Witch.
And right.
If it was just called that, it had nothing to do with the Halloween series, I don't think it would have gotten much backlash as it does. It's one of my guilty pleasures because it's a movie that's actually set in Halloween and has something to do with the holiday. Even though the first movies, you know, they all take place during Halloween, if you take away the elements, it doesn't really ruin the story. This story is cemented in Halloween. Like, the kids have to wear the masks on Halloween. I think Tom Atkins does a good job in this movie. It is directed by Tom Lee Wallace, who is one of the editors and production designers of the first movie, and I think it's creepy fun. I enjoyed watching this one.
I think I've watched like Halloween 1, 2, and then like 4, 5, 6 or something. I completely skipped over 3, so I feel like I need to go back and watch it now.
It's a fun movie though, but just don't think of it being as part of the canon. It's kind of like a one-off. It's like one of those like stepbrothers to Bunkles that you don't talk about in the series, but still kind of fun to hang out with, you know.
Sure.
I can't remember if we talked about this on the last podcast, Mark, but I read that, you know, originally Halloween was supposed to be an anthology series with every movie being a different story. But after the success of the first one, they doubled down, pumped out the sequel. And then for the third one, they went back to the original idea. And it just kind of became a mishmash of like not really being able to find its tone, I think. So, Vern, I agree with you. I think had they named it Season of the Witch, it probably would have done a lot better. But when you name it Halloween and people are expecting and want Michael Myers, there's probably just the initial uproar that they ran into with it.
But how would there be uproar? I mean, the trailers show nothing of Michael Myers. I just don't get why the people would be so upset.
Yeah, I don't know. Then they went right back to the, you know, with 4 and 5 and 6 just churning out, you know, Michael Myers slasher films with not a whole lot of thought put into them, I think it's fair to say.
But yeah, I think Vern raises a good point. You know, I think over the years that Season of the Witch has built a pretty significant cult following where, you know, if you get really into a lot of Halloween fans who watch everything from 1978 to 2018, like, I think the common theme is a lot of them kind of place Season of the Witch near the top. You know, maybe it's like 3 or 4, but, you know, out of the however many they've done, 8 or 9, like, it's usually in the top third or the top half. So, you know, Vern kind of hit on a lot of it. I can't really say from experience that I've watched it, but I've heard some of the same things. It's just people give it a bad rap because it's not part of the Michael Myers type storyline and that type of vibe.
Right.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I know, John, did we hear from you at all about some of your favorites at all? I mean, I can go back to my list again.
Well, the one that that I really enjoy, and it was actually more of a recent film. I can't remember if it was 2014 or 15, but it's a movie that Ethan Hawke starred in called Sinister.
I was going to bring that up at some point. Great minds think alike. Yeah.
That was on your list?
Yeah, I think that was 2012. Yep.
Oh, wow, even further back. Yeah, God, I remember I went to see that by myself at the theater at like 10 o'clock on a Friday. I was living in Chicago at the time. I had to walk down, you know, like a dark suburban-esque type street, which, you know, at night when it's pitch black and looks like a bunch of creepy houses, I might have run home from the theater as a like 25-year-old adult male. I was so freaked out after that movie. But I thought it was really, really well done. I know I was jumping throughout the entire movie. Mm-hmm. I thought the like the found footage, you know, like it wasn't VHS, but I guess whatever the recordings that Ethan Hawke finds and watches. I don't know. I thought that whole aspect was very well done. There's a nice little twist at the end, which I wasn't expecting, even though it might be kind of obvious. But I don't know. I really thought it was just a well-done horror movie that kind of had me on the edge of my seat throughout. And more than that, I was just intrigued by the story of it.
I agree. I couldn't agree with you more. You know, I think it's definitely one of the best horror movies of this decade, but I wouldn't be I wouldn't doubt or knock anyone who want to say it's one of the best horror movies ever, because I did not see this in the theater. When it came out, I was probably 22, but seeing it in theater probably would have given me the same exact effect too. I saw it at home, kind of in the dark, on a pretty good television, but, you know, Sinister has this tone, it has this vibe, it has this atmosphere, really within the first couple minutes, where I don't remember feeling like this a lot in horror movies, but it's like, you know, nothing good is going to happen once you start watching the first 5 minutes of this movie. It's like something terrible is going to happen. This family, whatever's going to be going on, they're doomed. I had that vibe from the get-go, and it never slipped me at all. And as you said, looking at those VHS tapes, and they all have like a similar theme where they start off a little like jovial, where you've got good music, but then something happens, and then it's just like, what the hell just happened? You know, what we see just all the aftermath or stuff that's getting ready to happen. But Sinister, like a lot of really good horror movies, they kind of stop right before, you know, the really graphic stuff happens, and it just kind of leaves the image in your brain, much like, you know, Bagul, where you see something and you're not sure it's there, but you're pretty sure it might be, and that kind of plays with your mind a whole lot more than, you know, actually seeing that act.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you see that one, Vern?
I you know what, I have. And I don't remember much of the storyline of it, but I do remember certain sequences when he was watching the videos, and that was actually really creepy. The only thing I really knew about this movie before it was even made is that one of the writers of this, his name is C. Robert Cargill, and Cargill was once a podcaster and a blogger for this site called Spill.com. And I used to listen to all their audio podcasts, and they had YouTube videos, and they were just like, what you and Mark are doing now. You know, you're just, John and Mark, you guys are just doing a podcast, and they were just this podcast network, and then one of them wrote a movie, and it became Sinister. So I knew this writer as just being a movie critic blogger who became a screenwriter. And
no kidding.
I want to check that out, and he actually did a really good job with the material that he wrote. So, yeah, I cannot fault you at all in this movie. I don't have much to say about it because it has been a few years since I have seen it, and I have not watched it recently. But, yeah, I will agree with you that it is a very good, legitimate horror film.
Did he do the sequel as well, Vern?
I'm looking that up right now, and I don't think so. Let me just double check here. Actually, yes, he did.
Oh, wow.
He did do the sequel. And he also wrote Doctor Strange.
No kidding. Quite the career path.
Yeah. He helped write the screenplay for Doctor Strange. Yeah, so he did Sinister, Doctor Strange, and then that's it really right now for features.
Wow, that's impressive.
It is.
Well, yeah, Mark, anything, actually, you did mention, like, kind of, like, a just a bad feeling throughout the movie. I think two minutes into it, like, right at the start, my stomach just almost, like, turned over. I was like, oh, man, this is gonna be, like, intense to sit through. And it was just, it was a lot. It felt so real when you're watching the video footage. I was like, oh, my God, I could, like, picture myself in any of these sequences.
Yeah, I you know, couldn't agree more with you. And you know, I had a great turn from Ethan Hawke. I mean, his family was good too. Sometimes, you know, people rag on kid actors, they're not that good, but the family was what had nailed all their parts in the right way. And even he had that small little bit from Vincent D'Onofrio as the professor, and then he's starting to really reveal more of the backstory of Bagul and how that plays in. And you know, he just delivers it so straight-laced, and, you know, he's so serious as he delivers it. And, yeah I just – I mean, I'll probably have to watch it again before Halloween's over, but I'm probably going to have the same exact feeling. You know, the jump scares are executed well. It never really felt like that cheap. And then, you know, the climax where, you know, you just – you see everything that's put into place, and it just kind of comes back to square one where you have that same feeling where – you know, whatever happens, this family's going to be doomed. You know, it's not going to end well. And, you know, we're probably delving into spoilers here, but yeah, it doesn't end well.
Yeah, it's an intense one for sure. All right, Vern, anything else on your list there?
All right, yes. Well, since you mentioned Silver Bullet there, John, I think I have to mention another werewolf movie, and that is Ginger Snaps. Have any of you heard or seen
this?
I've heard of it, but I know
virtually nothing about it.
Okay, well, Ginger Snaps, it was done by the creators of Orphan Black, John Fawcett, Karen Walton, and it's a story about these two outcast sisters, Bridget and Ginger, and they, one day, they're trying to play a prank on this girl that picks on them, and then Ginger gets attacked by a creature, and she slowly is starting to become a werewolf, all right? But everyone, like her parents and teachers, they all think that she's just going through her period. She's going through puberty. Mm. And so it's sort of a tale about, you know, female adolescence mixed with a werewolf story. And it's really brilliant. Catherine Isabel plays Ginger. Emily Perkins plays Bridget. They have this really great chemistry with each other. It's got really great practical effects. I think, yes, and I know there are some sequences with the werewolf where it looks kind of cheesy, but this movie did come out in 2000, and for the budget that they had back then, this was a Canadian production, it definitely wasn't made with a big enough budget. I thought they did a really good job with this. Storyline's great. It's just a really fun movie. And every time I watch the movie with someone, they always end up kind of crying at the end of this. It does become, it does kind of tug at your heartstrings a little bit.
Huh. Didn't see that coming.
Yeah. And, like I said before, I don't know if you guys seen that show Orphan Black about the clones.
Yeah, I actually watched that entire show. Finished it not too long ago.
Yeah, well, it's from the same creators of that. Like, the writers and directors of a lot of episodes were the creators of this movie. It is a trilogy of movies. There are three of them. I think only the first two are actually really good. The third one is more of a prequel, and it really has nothing that much to do with the other ones, even though the same actors are in all three of them. The same two are in there. But yeah, I still think it's a very solid werewolf film.
Okay.
Well, might have to give this one a watch.
Yeah. I don't know where you can find it, though, because it is kind of difficult to... I'm sure you can find it streaming somewhere, but... Yeah, it's on Prime. You can watch it on Prime. Okay. All right, good.
All right, well, I'm building up my my pre-Halloween watch list, so we got that going.
Okay, absolutely. Good. Well, I guess it swings back to me now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, what we got, Mark?
Okay, well, this movie had come out again many years before I was born. But I was introduced to it, I think, about maybe 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago, max. Movie called Phantasm. You guys seen that? Heard of it?
I heard about the director because I have seen Bubba Hotep.
Okay. I think it's Don Coscarelli. It's definitely Italian.
Yes.
So I might have butchered that. But Phantasm, you know, it's very much a cult classic now at this point. I think when it came out, it was kind of mixed in regards to the reviews, but, you know, it pretty much follows this this family, and more or less like these two brothers. You got an older brother and a younger brother, and this younger brother keeps on seeing this mysterious figure, and he's really just known as a tall man, played by, you know, the late, great Angus Schrim. This was his, you know, role that everyone remembers him for. And, you know, there's a whole bunch of mystery going on. There's the stuff that he may or may not be doing or manipulating. To be honest, the plot is a little bit muddled. It doesn't always make a whole bunch of sense. But there is this, like, level of, I just don't want to say atmosphere, but it's very vivid. You know, it takes sci-fi a little bit and it melds it with horror. It's got a really good theme, too, if you guys have time to pull it up on YouTube. But it's like a really, really moody and intense theme. It's got that MIDI 808 type feel. But I remember watching this, and, you know, the scares weren't like super high, but it was just this level of consistent atmosphere and really unpredictability, I would say. I didn't know where the movie was going. I had no idea how it was going to end, and I could never have guessed, you know, how it would have ended. Since this first one, it's gotten really, really chaotic and, you know, time shifting here and there and coming back to the past, going back to the future, where even its biggest fans don't even know kind of how the story makes sense. But this first one, absolutely, I would recommend, just for the sheer fact that it is very unpredictable and it does have a kind of a different vibe than a lot of the different movies that came out during that time. It came out a year after Halloween. It came out a couple years after Jaws, you know, a little bit before Friday the 13th. So it definitely feels like it had its own little, you know, corner and style to it.
Yeah. I I haven't even heard of this. I'm just doing some research right now.
I've heard of it. I know about the ball that has, like, the knaves coming out of it. I just have never seen this before.
It'll be another one of those movies I think would be a little hard to find, though I think it might be remastered in some places on Blu-ray. And like I said, the effects aren't great. You know, it's one of those other movies where it wasn't made for that much. I forget what the official budget was. It might have been even less than Halloween when I think about it. But, you got some amateur, you know, work in there. $300,000, so around the same. Did not make the same money Halloween did. But it's definitely, again, got some – it's got, like, a surreal feel. A lot of the horror movies don't have that type of feel. It's very surreal. Vern, you brought up the ball. That's kind of its other iconic image next to the tall man. So – if you guys ever have some time, you know, I would at least give it a run. It's not amazing, but it does have a very different vibe than some of the other things you might be used to.
What's the ball with the knife in it?
That's like one of the tall man's tools that he uses, to get the job done. I want to say it's like one of his minions, and again, the plot is kind of muddled. It's not great. It's not super precise or all the way clear, but I think they use that to essentially control these people so the tall man can use them for something else.
Interesting. Well, shoot. I mean, it looks like they still have these movies coming out today. Yeah. Like one came out 2 years ago.
Yeah, like I said, they have a very, very dedicated and very niche, but it is a dedicated following, and people will, you know, ride and die with these videos. And I think they still have a lot of the same guys. Even Angus Shrine, his final appearance, he died a couple years ago. He still played the tall man. So, you know, the people who starred in this in 1978 still gave it their all in 2016. And apparently, that last movie, Ravager, is like the second best in the franchise. So take that for what you will. Yeah.
Well, still going strong today.
Yeah. But John, what do you got there, buddy, for your other feature?
Man, I think one of the last ones I got that comes to mind is another throwback. First time I saw a glimpse of it when I was small, and I couldn't even handle it. It was, you know, freaking me out so much. But I did a rewatch probably 6 or 7 years ago, and the effects were not great, but it is a Kurt Russell classic with The Thing.
Mm.
Oh, yeah. Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, I love that movie. It is that's a John Carpenter, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
John Carpenter, hell yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's – I absolutely love it. It's just such a unique, premise for a movie, and you never know, like, who's infected with – this, you know, alien that's spreading from person to person. And there's like the really intense scene where Kurt Russell is, you know, running a test to see who it is. And I just think it's really well done. The graphics, again, you're probably going to laugh at a few scenes, but if you can appreciate the movie for, you know, I think what it is and probably what it meant at that time, it's very, very enjoyable. And ever since then, I've just been on the Kurt Russell train. So,
Kurt Russell, can't go wrong, Mr. Russell.
Yeah.
Good choice there. Great choice. Holy shit. I can't see anything that's never been said before about The Thing. It's just classic. In fact, I know it's a remake of Howard Hawks' The Thing from Another World. In fact, when you watch Halloween, that's the movie that the kids are watching. While all this stuff is going on there, and so it seems fitting that John Carpenter was the one to actually remake that feature. And I believe in 2011 it was remade again to try to do like a prequel to it, which I have not seen. I'm kind of curious to watch it, but I'm afraid to watch it because I know it will not compare to the greatest that is The Thing. Because when you watch that movie, you have no idea of who's infected. In fact, I've seen the movie before, like, a few times, and every time I watch it, every time I totally forget who's infected. And every time I watch it, it totally surprised me. It's like when they do the blood test, and they tested everyone out. To this day, I will watch that movie again and totally forget who it is, and it completely surprises me again. I think that's just the brilliance The Work Done by Carpenter and crew with that. Yeah, just really good movie.
I'm going to have to watch it again tonight now. But yeah, I did. So, Vern, I did watch the 2011. And while I still enjoyed it just because, you know, it was reminiscent of the original. And I mean, you could say it's a prequel. It's pretty much like a remake of the thing. You know, a lot of similar parts. They just go through the exact same thing at a different, you know, Arctic station down there. You got Joel Edgerton in it, so enjoyable to see him in the movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, it you know, pales in comparison to the original.
Gotcha. All right. I'm a little afraid right now to follow up the thing. Now, keep in mind, folks, that, like I said before, these are just movies that I like as of right now, okay? I'm not saying that these will be my favorites next year. These may not even be my favorite tomorrow. But yes, I'm going to pick it right now. I'm going to go with The Neon Demon. Now.
Oh, okay, interesting.
Okay, I've been curious about that one. I'm interested to hear your thoughts.
Now, this is a movie that will not seem like a horror feature when you first watch it, all right? Because the basic storyline is about this girl. She moves to LA to become a model, and everyone starts hiring her for these jobs because she feels like she has the it factor. She befriends these three other models who are always trying to push her to be this, to have more confidence in herself. And it's because they want to harness her power. I think this movie, it looks like a better remake of Suspiria than the recent Suspiria is, just because of the use of colors in there. But if I'm going to just describe why I think it's a horror film, I have to get into some spoilers here. And I don't really want to do that, though. But when you watch the movie, kind of keep watch of the girls that Jesse befriends. Jesse is played by Ella Fanning, and one of the witches is played by Jenna Malone, and she plays a makeup designer, and her two other friends are models, and they're trying to get these jobs being casted as models for other things, and this girl keeps getting casted ahead of her, and it's just this really weird movie where things get crazy around the third act, but keep watch on those characters right there, because they definitely have alternative motives, and the movie goes really off the rails, not like story wise, it just goes really batch kind of crazy in the third act, once Jesse is able to harness what's known as the Neon Demon, once he's able to like harness that, I think it's where the horror really begins there. Keanu Reeves is in this. He plays this creepy hotel manager. Guy who's always like leering after these young girls in there. I think he's really great, especially if you watch like John Wick and then this, because they're completely polar opposite characters. You know, basically in this movie, he's kind of like fat and he's got like this really kind of like rugged beard looked on him more than John Wick did. I know this is a movie that a lot of people don't like because this movie is really steeped in symbolism and metaphors, and it's one you have to kind of just sit back and watch the whole thing, and then maybe you'll get to take your own versions of the movie and make up your own your own assumptions about them. But this is a movie I saw in theaters, and I had no idea what the hell to expect, but it completely surprised me. It's got gorgeous cinematography. I think this, the whole Nicholas Winton reference scale, this is less than Drive, but more than Only God Forgives.
Yeah, and I was really curious about this movie when it first came out, because I think I had watched Drive not too long beforehand, and then I watched Only God Forgives before Neon Demon came out, and then I lost all interest because I didn't really enjoy that movie.
Yeah.
So I was kind of torn. I was looking for a reason to watch it, but I didn't have one, so I don't know, Vern. If you say it's that good, I'm willing to give it a shot.
Give it a shot there, okay? Because it's mainly, I think what movie really surprised me was the ending and how crazy things get. And I think this is a fun movie to kind of discuss what it means. And like I said, I could tell you the reason why I think it's a really great horror film, but if I did, that kind of spoils the experience of watching it. But it does have some really kind of creepy, horrific scenes. Jenna Malone has a certain scene in a morgue, and that's all I'm going to say, but it's really kind of freaky. But it's really kind of brave acting on her part. Not for everyone, and I totally respect that movie not being for everyone. But if you're a person that like enjoys visuals and music, one thing too, do not watch this during the day. Do not watch this during the day. You need to be in like a black room with limited light. So like dark night, maybe a lamp on, because there are sequences where it has like a strobing effect on there. And when you watch it in the day, it just kind of like messes it up. So that's one thing I'll say. Watch this like towards the night. Okay.
All right. Well, okay. There we have it. Neon Demon, seal of approval from Vern. Guarantees yeah. that you'll love it.
No, I didn't say that. No. You're going to give me a bunch of hate mail now, all right?
I echo Vern. I actually did see it also in a theater a couple of years ago. I like it a lot, too. Vern kind of hit on all the points. You know, it is a very visual, very sensory type of movie. And which isn't a shock because that's kind of what Nicholas Winding Refn has done. But they also got a really good score by Cliff Martinez. You know, you could listen to the score on Spotify, John, and you probably like a lot of it because it's got a really, okay. really moody kind of, like I said, I've used the word already before, but sensory type of score. But yeah, you know, it doesn't start so much like a horror. I'd say it's a lot more of like a drama type thriller. I'm not going to give a whole bunch of spoilers, but I definitely found it kind of like an analysis of the music business and the business of stardom and what anybody is willing to do to kind of maintain their star, their figure, their aura, that type of stuff. Sometimes it's being taken very, very literal. So there's a lot of stuff you can get out of this movie for sure. It definitely gets very horrific, I'd say, around the second act, definitely the final act, but the second half is when things do start to unravel a little bit. And, you know, you're going to see a lot of stuff you don't necessarily want to see. And there's a lot of analysis and there's a lot of criticism on some other sites, you know, some of it good, some of it bad. But, you know, it definitely got some people talking for sure. So that's a very interesting pick you made, Vern. But I kind of echo that. It does have that horror vibe in the last act. Last half of the movie. The only thing I don't agree with, I think I like Keanu Reeves, but I think his character doesn't really amount to a whole bunch in the movie, but it has been a couple years since I've seen it, so you know, take that with a grain of salt.
Gotcha. Okay, fair enough there. One more thing too, I think their sound design is really good in this. Mm-hmm. The sequence where Jesse hears something in another room, and if you die your sound system, it's very creepy. You don't see anything, but you hear stuff, and that's really unnerving.
Yeah, and it's very, I guess the last thing I'll leave it on, it's very, you know, trance-like. It's very entrancing. There's a couple scenes where there's no words being said at all for like 5 or 6 minutes. He has a couple scenes like that in the movie where, you know, all he has is music and you're just looking at images and it's very, very enthralling.
Yes.
All right, well, it sounds like it's worth a watch. Mark, I know we're probably getting close to our hour. Mm-hmm. That we had in mind for the limit, but if we want to start to wrap things up here quick and maybe just run through the rest of your guys' lists that you have, I think I'm good on my end. I think we already touched on the 5 or 6 that I wanted to go through. So, Mark, what else did you have on there?
Yeah, so I have The Shining. I think that was 1982, I want to say, Jack Nicholson. I think some people will probably say it's not pure horror, but I definitely think there are more than enough horror scenes and more than enough approaches in the movie to classify that as a horror. A lot of iconic moments that happen in that movie. Nightmare on Elm Street, the first one, you know, I don't think a whole bunch needs to be said. about that. It's the first movie that introduced everyone to Freddy Krueger, but it's also the movie where, you know, there wasn't a whole bunch of joking around. It was pretty serious. There might have been the occasional one-liner by the kids or whatever, but they played it really straight, and it really does have that, you know, that slasher edge and that slasher uneasiness that the 80s were known for. And then the last one would probably be Poltergeist, 1982.
Oh,
I haven't seen that in a long, long time, but I do remember watching it with my family maybe when I was like 10 or 11 or 12. And there's always that one scene that sticks out for me. It might not be the scene everyone remembers, but the scene for me is when, I forget how it occurs, but there's that steak and it comes out of somewhere, and then like the maggots just come out of the meat. And I don't know why I remember that scene over other scenes, but something about that scene and that imagery just stuck with me forever. So, but yeah, Poltergeist is up there too, directed by the man of Texas Chainsaw Massacre fame, Noah Hooper.
Oh, no kidding. That was the same guy.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I know this controversy because a lot of people are thinking that it was Spielberg directing that movie. It was more just Spielberg vibe. But you understand this too, like, Toby Hooper, yes, he did the Texas Chainsaw Massacre number one, but you understand this too, Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 is a different movie than the first one. Toby Hooper can do family stuff right there. And yes, even though Spielberg was on set as a producer of the movie, and even though it's definitely got Spielberg vibe, it still was a Toby Hooper film. And I think that he did a brilliant job. I think Joe Beth Williams, Craig T. Nelson, Heather O'Rourke, everyone in that feature is great. We all heard about the curses that the movie has put forth, that the older sister of the movie was killed by her boyfriend, and then Heather O'Rourke was cursed after doing the three of these movies. So yeah, I think the movie is a great Halloween movie to watch, and then it's also kind of fun to go and look up the history of the production of that movie. So yeah, Noah, great pick, Mark. Great.
Thanks.
Yeah, three classics right there. Vern, were there any other ones on your list?
The only, Mark mentioned Poltergeist. The only other one on my list was The Brood. This is a David Cronenberg feature, 1979, and it's about this father whose wife is at this resort trying to basically cure her demons. They have a daughter, and then suddenly all these manifestations of a rage is shown as being like these creepy monster kids wearing this red coat, and they go around hunting and killing people. I actually really kind of enjoy this because it's classic David Cronenberg body horror before he did The Fly. It's really kind of fun. I gotta say, the special effects of this are pretty good. I know Criterion actually released a really good version of this movie. Yeah, it's just mainly the makeup work of this. There's a great sequence with the mother character near the end of the movie where you find out where these manifestations are coming from, and you're really not quite sure. At first you think that both things are separate, like these creepy kids and her having to freak out this place is two separate things, but they become one. Yeah, I actually really kind of enjoy this film, but it's one I don't want to talk too much about, especially if you haven't seen it before. But The Brood, 1979, it's early Cronenberg, but it's all you need to know. If you enjoyed The Fly or Videodrome, definitely would recommend checking this out. Yeah.
All right, well, Vern, I think you definitely gave some good low-key recommendations to check out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you. Yes, like I said before, I mean, if we do this again next year, I'll have a completely new list of horror films.
Yeah.
Well, that's why movies are so great.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, tell me, guys, I mean, what do you guys have coming up here for Cinema Recap?
It might be kind of a slow week.
or weekend this week, just with not a whole lot coming out. I think we have like Hunter Killer, maybe one other movie, Mark.
Yeah, Hunter Killer. God, I'm zoning out. Johnny English comes back out, so kind of a light week as far as the cinema goes.
Do you guys get in Suspiria?
I don't know if my theater is getting Suspiria, at least not this week. Maybe in the next week.
Yeah, neither is my theater's. Okay.
I think I'll probably have it during the wide release.
Okay.
Have you seen it already, Bern?
I have not. I saw that it was supposed to be coming out this weekend, so I'm looking over my theater's like, is it here? Like, no, it's not here. Okay. All right, so no, I haven't yet. One more thing too, you were talking earlier about the original Halloween, and yeah. I did see that movie in theaters because they were replaying it in theaters. And the cool thing is this, is that there were kids younger in the first rows watching the movie, and they were getting scared at the same exact moments that I got scared when I first watched that movie.
You know, that's a very good thing that you brought up, because I think all of us talked about how we had a good time, but it wasn't maybe super scary. But you also brought up at this point in time in this pod that it still had that same vibe where, you know, when you were young, this movie did have an effect on you. So maybe that's the vibe that McBride and Gordon Greer are going for. You know, let's bring the horror to some of these young kids who we know are going to see this movie. It's going to stick with them, you know, as they grow up. So,
I don't hear this. I talked about the original, the 1978
version. Oh, okay. You saw it in the theater again?
I saw that in theaters again because there's a theater that was replaying it for a really cheap price. So a bunch of young kids were watching the original Halloween in theaters.
Okay.
I was able to, watch their reactions, and they had the same reactions to that movie that I had when I first watched that movie. And I should have talked about that when you were first mentioning that.
That's okay. It's the beauty of being live.
But yeah, I was really kind of impressed that they got into the same vibe, because they were getting scared at moments. Even fate scares, they were jumping. Yeah. And so that is like the brilliance of John Carpenter doing that film. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, withstood the test of the time.
Yeah. All right.
All right, guys. Well, anything else before we wrap things up?
Well, just the one thing that I want to plug real quickly for Cinema Recall. I have an episode where me and guest Zoe from Zoba with a Shotgun and Stephen Palmer from Asian Cinema Film Club, we talk about movies that we hate that everyone else loves. So, and there's actually kind of some surprising things on that list from our guests on there and me as well. And so, yeah, that'll probably be posting sometime next week, probably after Halloween. So, look for that.
Very nice. Sounds like a quite an interesting premise there. I like it.
Yeah, we did an episode earlier where we had movies that we love that everyone hates. So, yeah.
Good deal. Well, yeah, be sure to check it out. And we appreciate you tuning in to our little Halloween-centric episode of Cinema Recap. And we will catch up with you for the box office review next week.
All right. Hey, everybody.
All right, guys. Take care.
Bye.